Hey, so soon I'm going to start a Patreon, so soon I'll be able to have my own Patreon as a sponsor for this podcast. I'm making progress. If you don't know what Patreon is, it's a platform where you can subscribe to an artist and support him financially for his projects so he can focus on making them better and better and more and more, and also improve his English grammar. So that last episode was terrible. What the hell was I thinking? Okay, guys, I hope I'm not boring the smack out of you, but I promise I will bring guests on soon. I have a lot of cool friends who are doing cool things, and they have a lot of interesting things to talk about, and we will cover many things of interest very soon. But first, I gotta take care of a couple things. I was gonna do this episode, like number two, on the things I've done and am doing in life, but I have to go back over episode one now because I feel like a jerk. I'm such a nice guy, I can't even say opinionated things. It's like, without regretting it. I used to be a pranking dick and do and say anything to anyone, and even freak out random strangers in public by playing weird characters in real life and causing them to think I was an insane person, but I'm much more conscientious now. So, when I listened back to episode one, I thought I was offending a bunch of people, and we live in a millennials world where offending people will soon become illegal, so I don't want to get arrested for having an offensive opinion. So, I have to go back over some of the things that I said and re-explore them. So, the best way to stop conflict and avoid war is to communicate with the enemy, to, you know, ask the enemy what its perspective is, even if that enemy is your own mind. Second, I realized I seem really shallow. I mean, I went on and on about things I like, and most of them were cars and material objects and types of foods. It's like, there's things in life that are way more important than stuff you own. So, I feel like wearing the dunce hat and sitting in the back of the class and facing the wall until I dig a little deeper into the things in life that are fulfilling, just beyond cool stuff that mediocre rappers rhyme about. You know, cool stuff, there's more to life than cool stuff. And okay, the first episode is out on YouTube, and it's also on aaronpetta.com/podcast. Were you able to find it on iTunes? I synced it up to a thing that's supposed to be able to put it on iTunes. I'm not sure if it's there. And where else do you get your podcasts? Stitcher? Spotify? TuneIn? Let me know. My friend told me that SoundCloud is not really, like, legit anymore. But I don't know. Let me know. Let me know in the comments, and I will try to get it on those channels, wherever you like them. And so I'm setting up a call-in line, too. I'm setting up a call-in line where you can call me. Like, you won't actually talk to me, although that's a possibility, too. Call me, leave a message, like on a hotline, ask a question, add a criticism, anything you want, and I'll play it on the show and then answer your inquiry. So stay tuned for that number, probably in the next episode. All right, so things and stuff. Let's re-explore this. Temperature, weather. There are so many kinds of good and bad weather, and weather can be good in some situations and bad in others. Now, I grew up in Canada, so I have this aversion to cold temperatures, but it's mostly a defense mechanism for an insecurity, really. It's like when the weather gets cold, people say to me, "You're from Canada, don't you like this?" No, of course not. It's freezing. It sucks. You don't say to a short guy, "Hey, you used to being short. Don't you like it that all the chicks are taller than you?" No, that would suck. Just because you're used to a disadvantage doesn't mean you like it. So, being from Canada and growing up in cold weather and now living in New York, which also has a lot of cold weather, I get defensive. I'm above cold weather now. Like, cold weather is for Canadian suckers who live north of the border and can't enjoy the splendors of Florida and California and flip-flops on the boardwalk in February and lizards in coconut trees and gun racks on convertible pickups and so on. Like, you know, like the higher culture, blah, 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 of the American South, blah, blah, blah. So, well, that's lame. Cold weather can be awesome sometimes, you know? And you have to embrace and enjoy all seasons. Well, you don't have to. I'm just saying. I think it's more healthy thing to embrace and enjoy all seasons. And this summer, I was actually way too hot. And now the fall is coming, and it's crisp sometimes, and I'm starting to feel like a pumpkin spice girl. And, like, I can't wait to wear sweaters and, like, brush through the fallen leaves and you know, put on, you know, put my slutty, skimpy summer clothes in the storage closet, you know. So I'm sorry about being a cold hater. It was bad. It was rude. Old rock music. It's great. You know, Diana Ross, the Shirelles, and all the doo-wop from the 50s and all the psychedelic from the 60s. It's great. I love it. Now, here's the thing. Just because millennials don't embrace it or don't get it doesn't mean it wasn't great in its time. And here's where my actual frustration comes in. From the disconnect, this disconnect. I get frustrated when older people today say that pop music today has no quality, no life, no soul. That's totally untrue. You just don't connect to it. Like, you just haven't bothered to pay attention. You're closed-minded, you know, and likewise, when I meet 25-year-old people who have never even heard of Jimi Hendrix, that's shocking. There is good in all pop music, in some place and time. I love it all. Sometimes, in some moments, it tires me out, you know? So, I guess mood and situation is really important to me. Like, when I go with my friends for a drink and it's night and we're raging or whatever, it's like, then, like, no depressing, whiny folk music from the 60s is appropriate. Definitely inappropriate. And people shouldn't be allowed to put that on the jukebox in a public bar when you're out. I don't know. See, here I go again. Like Angie from the Rolling Stones or The Piano Man by Billy Joel. These songs should be played on a long road trip or maybe camping or when you're with your grandpa or something. Like, but they're still great songs. They're still great songs. So my defense mechanism and my insecurity comes mostly from the old people who complain on and on that new music is terrible and they won't listen to anything newer than 80s or 90s. And I overreact to those people for being closed-minded and in so doing, become just as closed-minded myself. And that's no good. So, you know, also, in truth, all pop music is not created equally. And some gets really sophisticated in its harmonic structure and melodic and rhythmic qualities. And then when you get into, like, noise and timbre, that's how whole subgenres are fleshed out and actually created. And that's something for a whole other episode to talk about the subgenres of pop music. And that's a fun thing. And we can interview friends who know about stuff like that. Okay. Grains and gluten snobbery. Okay, here we go. So I know, grain-based foods are the most ubiquitous foods on the planet. They're everywhere. Like, literally everywhere that there's fast food or to-go food, it's wrapped in wheat or corn of some form. You'd have to be a farthead to think you're going to avoid it, and I am a farthead. I get it that gluten is delicious, more accurately, texturalicious. So again, this frustration with the overpresence of grain-based food products is a reactionary defense mechanism. Do I think people should be eating way less grain? Yes. Do I realize the current impracticality of this? Yes. It's my belief that grain food products are harming people, and most people who are being harmed by them aren't even aware of it. And this topic is not just an entire episode of a podcast. It's a whole podcast series entirely, entitled The Paleo Solution Podcast with Rob Wolf. So I listen to him. Go listen to him. I know nothing about this. But the real frustration comes in when people say, oh, you have a special diet. You have orthorexia. I can eat anything I want. I'm so glad. You know, I don't have those problems. I love pizza and cupcakes and fart cakes. You know, it's like, because that's what they are, fart cakes. But you do have those problems, and you do have a special diet. Your special diet is called the North American 21st Century Train Wreck Diet, and it's special in so many bad ways. And your problem is that you're not actually aware that it's harming you. Simply put, if you're chronically eating more than 150 grams of carbs a day, grain-based, so like a bowl of rice, a bowl of pasta, and two pieces of bread, approximately, unless you're training like an elite athlete going for the Olympics, you're stressing out your insulin response and you're causing a traffic accident in your body every single day, whether you feel it or not. And though you say, oh, I feel fine, my stomach doesn't hurt, many of the symptoms of grain damage, are subclinical until it's too late. Now, consider that Alzheimer's is now being nicknamed type 3 diabetes by medical professionals. I mean, it's obviously way more complicated than my oversimplifications here, and I'm not an expert or a scientist or even a dietitian. I'm just a frustrated jackass. So, again, don't listen to me. I'm a moron. But that's just my situation. So, yeah, it's the situation. So go ahead and go eat your grain-based dishes and love them, but don't feel bad that I can't, because I personally think we shouldn't. I think we should do it a lot less. Eat grainy grains. Z's. So my special diet is a diet that attempts to remove or exclude as many modern processed reductions of food substances into these strange substrates that are calorically dense but nutritionally void, and to remove as much of that as possible in order to maintain optimal dietary nutrient density and quality. Optimal dietary nutrient density and quality. So yeah. And now the white males thing. Oh my gosh. I get it. People are frustrated. They can't get jobs. Their situation sucks. They can't afford their bills. So they blame white men. Huh? For some reason, people seem to think that because our skin is white and we have a stick instead of a hole, that everything just comes to us. Like, I guess I will ask then, why? Why do you think that? Has it been easier for me to get a job as a bartender than a young chica with a nice front end? Nope. Has it been easy for me to get acting jobs? Do they just magically fall into my lap because I'm a white guy? Nope. Is it easy for me to book stand-up comedy spots all over town because I'm a white guy? Nope. Do I start in middle management instead of the mailroom? No. I pleaded with an Indian guy who ran a Pizza Hut, in Toronto, to give me a job. And after 30 minutes of intensive grilling and questioning, he said, thanks for the interview, but I don't think you have what it takes to make it at Pizza Hut. And there's my horrible, racist Indian accent. So, like I couldn't get a job at a Pizza Hut, and I tried my darndest, amongst many other jobs I was applying for at the time. And, you know, at that level of extreme prestige. So, yeah, things have been a struggle for me so far. Fingers crossed, that ends now. So where is this perception coming from, that there's some sort of hidden privilege amongst us? Please, answer. I want to understand your perspective. I'm speaking. I want to be spoken to. I get it. Slavery was horrible. But that was 150, whatever, how many years ago it ended. And white men were slaves in America, too. It was called indentured servitude. Again, I'm not a historian. I'm not going to argue the finer details or get into it. I'm not an expert. I'm just a jerk. So please, educate me. Come on my podcast. Tell me why. And this one doesn't come from an underlying security. I am truly perplexed as to why people believe this to be the case, and honestly, quite offended by it. I like all my friends of all types. There you go. He said, of all types. Oh, he's racist. And I would hate to think that they, or you, if you're one of my friends listening to this, that you're one of them, that you think of me as someone with some special implied or hidden advantage in life just because of the way I look and my gender. Like, what's up, guys? What's up? So there's that. American cars and American motorbikes. Oh, they're awesome. I love them. Again, it's a style choice. It's an aesthetic. A lifestyle. And it almost seems to be nowadays, like all cars, they're blending together as crap. A Mark II VW Golf or Jetta from the 80s, like a GTI, was an awesome little sizzling rocket. But today, they may as well be Chevys. And I still like VWs better, but I test drove one and it's like, it's cool, but they don't look that different from like a Toyota or an American car. Cars are losing their individuality, and that's really what hurts. You know, and American cars, they went through a time where they were really stupid, or a lot of them were, just grotesque and bad shapes, oversized sills and boxes and metal hanging off in the wrong places, almost like the obesity epidemic spread into cars, like in the 70s and the 80s. The BCD epidemic in America just was like, it got into the cars, like it hit Detroit, and it's like a virus. Ah. But to deny that classic Fetts or Shelbys or T-Birds or Mustangs or Camaros or whatever aren't their own original awesome coolness is lame, and it was a lame thing to say, and so I take it back. I'm allowed to take it back because I'm an artist, and I did the hypocritical oath saying that I can always take back whatever I said and that I can be irrational whenever I want to be. So I take it back. And who cares? Who cares how American cars turn? Who cares how they turn corners? They're fun, even if it's a cheesy fun. Enjoy it. I love it. As a matter of fact, I'll probably want to buy an old vintage Vette at some point, or like a Dodge Challenger or something. So, you know, and okay. So overall, I spent a lot of time talking about stupid materialistic stuff like cars and sunglasses and, you know, even architecture and museums. But that's just stuff. It's stuff. So I realize that the important thing in life is not stuff. It's chicks. Just kidding. No, actually, chicks are really important. My apologies. Chicks is derogatory. Girls. Okay, stop it. I'm a white male. I'm exercising my privilege. Ladies. It's a joke. I don't know. Is it better to be self-deprecating so that people like you more? Like, oh, I'll be charismatic and self-deprecating. Or is it better to just be a jerk? Anyways, I don't know. Materialism. Not the kind of materialism like, I'm a scientist and I believe the mind. I know the mind and the brain are one thing and there's no soul and we're all doomed. Not that kind of materialism. But materialism in the sense that talking about clothes and watches and material possessions, that gets boring fast. You know, I like the feeling of getting something done. I like the feeling of recording and posting this podcast. The feeling of working on a new song. The feeling of doing a comedy set in front of a new crowd, like I did last night, and getting some surprise laughs that I didn't even know I was going to get because I just riffed off the moment in the room. That's a good feeling. The feeling of process, the feeling of creativity, the feeling of doing. So now I'm going to start exploring process and creativity for a while. You know, let's just put cool, ornate, giltwood frames on hold for a minute, whether they be on Oliver Peoples sunglasses or in the Metropolitan Museum. But I guess, come to think of it, the reason that I like so many of those things is because they come from the creative process. Cool cars, cool stuff. I notice that I usually like a material object for its design, its quality, its artistry, its lineage, its origin, its whole milieu, you know, not its brand name or its popularity, but brand name creates a prestige, you know, after it happens. So let's talk about the creative process, the workflow process, the auditioning process, the fulfillment through accomplishment process, all these different, the songwriting process, you know, the hanging out with your family and friends at a barbecue process. That's interesting. You know, community fulfillment, creative fulfillment, community fulfillment, familial fulfillment. So the next episode, I will talk about what I've done, like what I've done in life, how I got started, my recent shows and plans and projects, and the stuff I'm going to create and release. So guys, please help me be less of a jerk. Please help me be less of a jerk. Tell me what you like. Tell me what you don't like about this podcast. How can I be less offensive and more entertaining? Because to be honest, doing humor with someone as the butt of the joke to me is just not classy. Shut up, Aaron, you're a loser. See? There it is. I'm tired of it. It's boring. It's lowbrow. Been there, done that. It's just not fulfilling. Like, I want to find humor and entertainment in a more altruistic fashion. Please comment in the comments. Please share in the sharesies. Sharesies, comment. So I just want to stress again, process, creativity. I'm not a teacher. My parents were teachers, and I actually don't like doing how-tos, you know? But that seems to be how everybody makes money in the world of creativity nowadays. It's like, how do you become successful on YouTube? Start a YouTube channel about how to become successful on YouTube. It's like a pyramid scheme. Everybody wants themselves to be the best. No one wants to be the end consumer. They want to consume your product only if it will make them a better creator of something, make them a better star in whatever. Unless you're a top-level creator. Now, I want to be a top-level creator. Like The Weeknd. The Weeknd, is that his real name? The Weeknd didn't write a book on how to write songs. He just wrote awesome songs. When you go listen to The Weeknd or watch SpongeBob, you don't watch a video on how to write a song like The Weeknd or how to create a really funny animated cartoon. You listen to the song or watch the cartoon and you go, oh, wow, great song. I can't hear my face when I'm with you. Or, ha, 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 hilarious cartoon. Oh, my God, Patrick. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's my point. But at the same time, we're going to explore here. We're going to explore, exploratory. And maybe this process, the actual podcasting process, can become lyrical or poetic or an actual art piece form in itself, or at least high quality prosaic. Are my words getting too fancy for you? Tell me if you're like, stop making fancy words and I'll explain the words. Like, I want my audience to be whoever wants to like it. I'm not trying to be highbrow. Prosaic means prose or written on paper like a not poem. I don't know. See, good. Like, I'm going dumb again. Well, okay, so enough of this boring episode. What do you want from me? I'm not Adam Lambert, damn it. Leave a comment. Thanks, guys. Bye. Out.